The bag is packed with the sticks. The drinks are cold. And the scorecards ready to go. Time to hit the links.
Team Europe wins this if Rory plays like Rory McIlroy. Like, if Rory's got to play probably four or five sessions, and he's got to go 4-1, 5-0.
It's time to go on the tee, sponsored by Majestic Oaks at Lake Lawn Resort and Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all.
It's been the year of Tommy, and Team USA is going to roll out foursomes to begin this tournament.
To me, Fleetwood's the villain.
He's silent assassin.
Yeah, no, I'm going to be yelling at my television, why don't you choke like you choked earlier this year?
Alongside PGA Tour Live Stephen Watson, here's Gabe Neitzel.
We've made it. It is the end of the season, the season finale of On the Tee. We look back, little year in review.
Putting a bow on year five.
Yeah, year number five. And what a year it was.
Oh.
Great year in golf.
Doesn't it kind of feel like it keeps getting better since we started the show? We thought we peaked early with USA winning a Ryder Cup at Whistling Straits, but I'm saying the professional game has delivered a lot of drama in those 5 years.
Still haven't won a Ryder Cup since?
We have...
You're the one who brought it up. That's your fault. You should know better by now.
You're right. We've only done 7 Ryder Cup review shows at this point.
I can't help myself. You have to help censor me.
You're right. That is
help
my
me,
job.
Help me. Is what I'm asking you to please do. But it was a great year in golf. And I think that's where we start. We kind of take a look back at the year that was major championships. And I think this is a pretty easy one to start. But what was the major championship of the year in 2025?
Might be one of the best golf experiences as a viewer that I have had. And that was Rory winning at Augusta. It made me feel things that every sports fan hopes to feel at some point. The emotional wave of the highs and lows of his final round on Sunday, ending in euphoria as a big Rory fan myself, understanding what that took mentally, physically, emotionally for him to get that monkey off of his back and what that will mean for his career, that he was finally able to become, you know, the sixth golfer to complete the career Grand Slam. And it was an incredible viewing experience. It was great theater, and it's going to be one of those days where I remember where I was the moment that putt dropped on the playoff hole for Rory McIlroy and how my body felt as a sports fan to just feel that adrenaline running through my veins.
It's the only answer, because it was the most dramatic major. By the time we got to 18 at the PGA, you're wearing your Quail Hollow hoodie today.
Yeah.
Scotty had, that one was, I mean, there was certainly some drama on Sunday in the PGA. John Rahm made things interesting briefly, but by the time we had gotten down the stretch, it was pretty obvious who was winning. Scotty won by 1,000 shots.
Yeah.
I think it might have been 5. But I don't recall. He was a landslide.
Yeah, he's still the only golfer to win each of his first 4 majors by 3 or more shots.
Which is crazy. And then Scotty kind of did the same thing at Port Rush. Yeah, kind of ran away from the field.
Yep.
There was a little bit of drama in the U.S. Open. But, you know, we had gotten to 18, and granted it was a long putt, but 2 putts for the win.
It was a great back 9.
Because
yes. It was, you know, great competition within the field. You had J.J. Spahn charging up late in the lead. You wondered if Sam Burns could hold on. You wondered if Adam Scott could get it done.
If the weather
late
was
in his
hold
career,
off.
If Robert McIntyre just had enough. You know, watching this all play out while he was watching it play out. You know, they did a great job with that. You know, dynamic on live television, just watching him in the scorer's room. And obviously weather playing a factor as well at the hardest golf course potentially on planet Earth. And you added some elements into it. It was really just a great major season, Gabe.
It was, but the Masters is... I mean, when somebody wins a career Grand Slam and wins a tournament that for the first time they've been trying for to win forever, I mean, how many different times have we gone into the Masters and Rory has a different plan on how he's going to attack it? Oh, it's really not that important. Oh, it's super important. I'm going to arrive early. I'm going to arrive late. We're only going to play a couple of holes. We're going to do... I mean, it seemed like he was trying to come up with, how do I solve this puzzle?
Yep.
I mean, and he has been for over a decade. And the ebbs and flows of the entire tournament to me, is what also kind of separates it. Because Rory is a storyline. Like, J.J. Spawn wasn't a storyline going into the U.S. Open.
Yep.
Sure, you can, obviously, Scotty is a storyline going into any major as the number one player in the world and the most dominant player in the game today. But Rory is just, can he complete the career Grand Slam? Can he finally overcome the demons of 2011?
Yeah.
2011, 14 years ago.
Yeah.
Is when he had that lead and then put one in a place we didn't even know existed. And now we know exists. And actually give a little bit better review after all the trees had kind of been taken out with the storm. Kind of get a nice little more view over there on the left side of number 10. So Rory's been a storyline of that every year since 2011.
And for arguably the most consistent golfer in that time span of that last 11 years before he won at Augusta, he had always been framed by his shortcomings, which is what makes his win so emotional for obviously Rory, but us as golf fans, because we felt like we won that with him. And I think that's what made being a fan so special that day, was just the collective feeling of rooting for somebody doing something that we never thought was actually going to be possible.
But it was more than just that day. Because Rory is a storyline, you're following him in the opening round. And he falls apart. Has, I'd like to say, an uncharacteristic double, but that is kind of what ended up defining this tournament for Rory, is making those doubles.
Has a four double, of them.
Has a double late in round one, ends up shooting even par, and he's seven shots off the lead. I mean, Justin Rose went out and just hid from everybody. Shot the best round of the day by three shots. He was seven under. Ludwig, Corey Connors, and Scotty were four under. You had Bryson at three under. But then just the slow, like, charge of Rory, right? As he tries to shoot 66 on Saturday. On Sunday, he shoots 66 again to have a two-shot lead over Bryson. Like, these two, we get Rory Bryson part two.
Yeah.
After, and they weren't playing together at Pinehurst, but you get Rory Bryson part two for a major championship. Bryson starts off strong, ultimately fades, shoots a 75, which unfortunately for him has always kind of been the story for the last handful of years, his Augusta, where he's got a 74 or 75 in one of those rounds, and that drops him from contention. You have Rose, who shoots a 75, but then shoots a 66, storming up the leaderboard once again. But Rory, he's got it in control. It's not a big deal. He's cruising. Until he isn't. I seriously cannot get over, and we're going to go over some of these shots, I'm assuming, because we're also going to have our shot of the year coming up in the next segment. The shots that he was able to execute and hit are some of the more unbelievable shots and shots that you are going to remember for a long time. But also, the ability to hit the wedge that he did on 13.
He was like a 9 handicap on Sunday.
pulling
shots,
I mean, for him,
out of nowhere and then just dunking it in the water.
For him to flare a wedge at Augusta National while in command of the tournament. Like, well, I mean, the only way he really blows this, if he dumps it into the tributary of Race. Well, he just dumped it into the tributary of Race Creek with a wedge. But then the ability to bounce back and hit some of the shots, but then to hit the ugly shot on 18 the first time around, only to come back playing his really good friend Justin Rose in the playoff. It is golf drama done at its best.
Yeah, I think I said it that episode after the Masters. That Sunday was as equally exhilarating as it was exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
And that was for me sitting on my couch at home. I couldn't even fathom what that must feel like in your body to ride that roller coaster of emotions, understanding your entire career is defined by the back nine at Augusta National.
But just to think of, I mean, he made a bogey on 11. Rory did. But do you remember how close that ball was to going in the water? Hits the tee shot right, has to punch one low, and you can't go left of the mounds. Just can't go left of the mounds because it all funnels to that pond. And he lands it left of the mounds, and it runs, and just barely stops.
Yep.
Ultimately makes bogey, but I mean, it could have been a much bigger number, but he avoids disaster there. And you're thinking, hey, he's avoided disaster. It is foot on the pedal time. Time to put that foot down. He's got the par 5 13th. He's got the par 5 15th. 16 is always a potential birdie hole if you hit that, execute the right shot off the slope, chasing it down. He's got chance for birdie. And he hits the wedge in on 13.
Yeah. But then he hits a shot on 15 that I think maybe three people on planet Earth can hit. And then he hits, you know, the comebacker on the first playoff hole, staring down the exact same yardage he had on 18 when he flared his wedge into the bunker. And he had to, the golf gods put the ball in the same spot and said, hit that club again, I dare you. And he sticks it.
How crazy is that, first of all? That he hit two drives on that hole, basically in the same spot, with that much pressure on. It's insane. Absolutely insane.
Yeah.
But yes, that is the 2025 Masters is one we're going to be talking about for a long, long time.
Yeah.
I think you had mentioned it. I think I agreed at the time. It's the most memorable Masters since 2019 when Tiger won.
Yeah. It might be the most for me, just because when Tiger won in 19, there were dramatic moments on that back nine, but there was nothing like we saw with Rory.
No, because Tiger's
It was
not-
mostly the field falling to Tiger and not Tiger but falling to himself.
But Tiger's still doing what he needed to do. He hit the remarkable shot on 16.
Francesco finding the water on 12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Francesco finding the water again on 13, or excuse me, on 15. But Tiger doing what he needed to do. He hit 15 and 2. It was a routine birdie. Then he makes a birdie on 16. So those back-to-back birdies that vault him in, he just didn't make mistakes. Like, arguably the best shot Tiger hit in 19 was the lag putt on number 9. Pulls one all the way to the back part of the three-tier green and somehow has to feed it down and does, you know, to 4 inches.
And Rory will tell you that the defining shot of his final round actually came on the third hole when he got up and down. After bombing his drive, he was about 25 yards. He had a nippy wedge that he had to, you know, try and get up and down from. At that point, he had already given 3 strokes back to Bryson to start off the final round. He's able to make that 4.
He made 2 doubles in the final round and won.
Yeah. He made 4 in the tournament.
Yeah. But to make 2 on Sunday.
Yeah.
Is unbelievable. And still shot 73, so he's 1 over, but still had the opportunities to win because it was just that much of an up and down day for Rory McIlroy.
Yeah. And I have to just, you know, give CBS a ton of credit too, from a spectator, the way that they captured the drama in those moments. You know, the walk from Rory from 18 to the scores table is going to be like one of those things etched in my mind forever. The tears flowing down, and you just lived it with him. Nobody spoke. It was just the fans. It was Rory. It was the chance. Even, you know, him falling to his knees, and you look around, and the still images will capture it just like the video. Nobody has phones. Everybody was just kind of taking it all in. That's one of the things that makes the Masters the Masters.
He's the only one not standing in the picture.
Yeah. It's a powerful image, and it's, yeah, the easy decision for favorite tournament and golf moment of the year.
We do have to hand out our shots of the year, maybe revisiting some of those shots that we were just talking about from the Masters coming up in just a moment. But you can discover a hidden lakeside course in beautiful Delavan, Wisconsin at Majestic Oaks. Tee off on a course with over 2 miles of lakefront where wide fairways and challenging greens wait. This lakeside 18-hole course offers a golfing experience like no other. Join them for the best family golf nights in the state where everyone can enjoy the game together. Enjoy golf, cart, drinks, and snacks for under $15 per person with several membership options. You can find that perfect fit for your lifestyle. So if you're ready to play, or want to check them out next golf season, book your tee time today. LakeLawnResort.com and Majestic Oaks Golf Course. Big shout out to Erin Hills. They have been partners of ours supporting On the Tee all 5 years that we have done this show. Erin Hills is Golf Digest 10th ranked public golf course in the nation. Charming overnight accommodations, championship golf experience. If you have not experienced it, book your 2026 tee time by going to erinhills.com.
We love you, Erin Hills.
We do. And they have been so good to us, and they have helped us provide a lot of content. And again, they hosted the U.S. Women's Open this year. I think I'd be remiss if we didn't mention that. We have a major championship in our state once again this year. And the USGA, incredibly helpful. setting up a special spot for us on the driving range to do all the shows we did there, setting up a couple of guests for us, one of which, Sarah Schmelzel, ended up factoring very much into the tournament down the stretch. So again, big shout out to Aaron Hills and the USGA for that and a great experience once again at Aaron Hills for major championship.
Yeah, and congratulations to Maya Stark for pulling off her first major here in Wisconsin. It was Brooks Koepka who won his first of five majors at Aaron Hills at the 2017 U.S. Open. So maybe it's the beginning of something special for Maya Stark. But regardless, she won here in Wisconsin. And when you win here, it turns out to work pretty well for your career. So, she said her best shot was the lag putt that she had on 18 because she was comfortable enough to be able to cozy her golf ball down with a two-shot lead on the final hole to make bogey and still win by a shot, which made me think about our favorite shots of the year on the men's side. So for our Gruber Law Offices One Call, that's all. Favorite shot of the year. Gabe, I want you to lead us off with this segment. Your favorite golf shot you saw in the PGA Tour season.
Yeah, of course, Gruber Law Offices, Wisconsin's premier injury firm. Wisconsin's own Gruber Law Offices One Call, that's all. Not shocking, we're going back to the Masters.
Oh.
And while I think I know what one you're going to take, honestly, the one I think you're taking is probably number three for me.
Ooh.
From that.
There were a lot of options.
I did not cut up number two, but the most ridiculous shot of that day was this one right here on hole number seven.
Flipped one little bit of that pine tree.
And it nearly clipped one little bit of the flag.
So seven can be a birdie hole, but it can be tight, right? It's a tight little driving hole at Augusta, and Rory pulls his tee shot left. And at that point in the round, you're going, oh, man. Right, I mean, it's
he's just grinding.
If you've got it, again, if you're in that fairway, you can kind of use the slopes around it, funnel it down to the hole, because the traditional Sunday location is front right, plenty of slopes to kind of funnel it down. Tiger did back in 2019. So many people have been able to use the slopes over those years. And you're thinking, man, okay, so if he punches out but he gets close, I mean, is he going to be able to get enough spin on the ball to kind of use some of those slopes? It's not going to be an easy up and down. And he hoists one. I mean, you heard when the contact of that ball was. Dottie says clipped a little bit of that tree, and it's still several seconds before that ball hits the green. Like, he just opened up the face of a 9-iron and hoisted it as high as he could. And
almost like Jordan Spieth a la Whistling Straits during the Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
Like when he was on the hill at 17. Like, that's how high that ball went.
And I mean, you want to talk about the number of people in the world that can hit that shot? As great as Scotty is, I don't know if Scotty's got that in the bag, because he doesn't have the speed that Rory does to be able to get through the ball. So to be able to hit that shot and then hit it as close as it did, I mean, it took a peek at the hole as it went by. If you recall, it lands, takes a little peek at the hole, and then it just continues to run by, and he's got manageable, missed the birdie putt, but he still saves par and ends up being a stress-free par before he goes on to the par 5 eighth hole. I mean, it's a shot that gets lost because of literally all of the exciting things happened after this, but it's the most incredible shot I think he hit the entire tournament.
Yeah, it was probably the most skillful shot that we saw from Rory McIlroy at the Masters. I'll give you that, but I think my choice is his shot on 15, his second shot, when he takes the 7-iron and, he's staring history in the face after he makes the double on 13. And he's at 10 under. He's tied with Ludvig Åberg and Justin Rose at 10 under with three holes to play. And what does he do?
7-iron. 7-iron. 207.
Come on. 6-iron yesterday set up an eagle. Is this enough? It is. Oh, here it comes. The shot of a lifetime.
I think it was the combination of the moment, the call, the feeling from the crowd. That was the moment where I was like, he's back. I was waiting for the crumble. And he still made it dramatic from that point on.
Because
that was the swing that made me think, He's out here to win this thing today.
So the reason why it'd be three for me, it was a great shot. Don't get me wrong. 17, I think, was better because to make a birdie there, because that birdie only ultimately, because at the time he was tied, but Justin Rose still had another birdie in the bag as well as he went on his birdie barrage down the stretch. So he needed to make another birdie to come in, and he made one on 8. On 17, which was spectacular. And honestly, we might be underrating the wedge shot a little bit as well, because it's not like Justin in the playoff hole. Because Justin Rose hit a pretty darn good shot in there. And to hit it inside of him with those demons swirling of, hey, last time I had this shot 20 minutes ago, I flared this thing right in the bunker. And if I do that, this tournament's over.
Yep.
And he hits it to 5 feet. Stones that wedge to 5 feet.
Yeah. So a lot of credit due to Harry Diamond for forcing him to compartmentalize in that situation and reset going into the playoff hole. I do have an honorable mention. Let's roll it.
Need to make it. 2 putts.
You win a U.S. Open making a 64-footer, walking off at Oakmont. Like, J.J. Spahn, we got to give you some love here.
Well, and for him to bounce back after the front nine that he had, and he was able to reset because of the delay that they had at Oakmont and pulled everybody off the course. And again, some of that was bad play. Some of that was just unlucky. Like, literally hitting the flag, I forget what hole, if it was 2 or 3, where he hits the flag and that just sends it off the false front and he's 40 yards away now when he should have had at most 4 feet.
Yeah.
And now, okay, he can't get up and down, makes another bogey. And for him to be able to settle the nerves and fight his way back, J.J. Spahn, I just still don't think he gets the respect he deserves, man. He stood with, I mean, he was in a playoff in the Players and then won a major championship. But he probably had the third best year, I think, on the PGA Tour.
And a playoff at the FedEx St. Jude, correct? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so 3 big-time events. Yeah, he loses 2 of them, but, I mean, the other major champions this year were all-time greats.
Yeah.
Scotty wins 2, first time he's able to do that in his career. Rory completes the career Grand Slam, which is obviously a big thing. And then J.J. Spahn wins the U.S. Open at a historical venue like Oakmont, and then still has, I mean, such a phenomenal year where he's competing with some of the biggest names in the sport, going toe-to-toe with them in some of the biggest events, like the Players, like the FedEx, in a playoff event. I would argue that I think J.J. might have had the third-best year behind the other 2 major champions. Like, the third-best year on the PGA Tour, that's a pretty damn good year.
Yeah, I put Tommy Fleetwood up there as well. I think Tommy, the way he finished off his season, how close he was knocking on the door, his performance in the Ryder Cup.
How many wins did Tommy champion. Have? How many wins did Tommy have this year?
Tour champion.
Oh, but it wasn't a major, right?
You know I'm a big fan of J.J. Spahn.
But again, this is what I'm talking about. The dude won a major this year and was fantastic, had a great Ryder Cup, and you want to put Tommy Fleetwood ahead of him. Tommy hasn't won a major. Tommy might not ever get into that club. JJ's in the club.
Hey, good for him. I have the fun stat about that 64-foot, 5-inch putt. Probability on the PGA Tour for a player making that putt, less than 2%.
Yeah.
They're 6 times more likely to 3-putt than hole out from that distance.
Wow.
Crazy.
And he just
buries it to walk it off.
Just no, and there was no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Because I remember watching that 5 feet away, I just yelled out, that's in the hole.
Yeah.
Holy crap, he made it.
And I know we mentioned Scotty won 2 majors, and I think it's also important to note his chip in on 17 at the BMW Championship was one of the iconic shots of this PGA Tour season, staring Bobby Mack in the face and just really ripped the BMW Championship away from him with chipping on in the second to last hole.
I mean,
that was a really cool moment.
But also, not having a Scotty shot here is very on brand for Scotty.
Yeah.
Because it's just consistency after consistency. Like, it's just an overwhelming experience over the course of 72 holes instead of just a quick shot of adrenaline.
I would want to know if Scotty Scheffler made 4 doubles in all of his majors combined.
This year? I could probably look that up.
Yeah. Maybe in the next commercial.
Yeah, during the commercial break, we can dive in.
Rory won a major making four doubles. Four. I don't know if Scotty made four doubles for all four majors combined.
Well, and then JJ, I mean, he made, how many bogeys did he make in a row?
Five of the first six holes.
Yeah, I think so, three in a row and five of the first six.
Yeah.
On Sunday. And he still won.
Yeah.
I would be hard pressed to find a Scotty stretch like that.
Yeah. Other ones I thought about too, Keegan Bradley's shot to set up the winning putt at the Travelers. Russell Henley chipping in on 16 at Bay Hill earlier in the season.
Potentially ending Colin Morikawa's career, yeah. Sure.
Also, shout out to Ryan Fox, you know, chipping in Myrtle Beach to win in a playoff, gets himself into some majors for the first time in a long time. Those were just some of the ones that came to mind outside of what we talked about with Rory at Augusta and J.J. Spawn's walk-off putt at Oakmont.
I'm really mad at myself because I just thought of what would have been a really good shot of the year. I'm just really upset with myself that I didn't think of it till right now, so I couldn't have the audio ready. You calling a shank. Might have been the shot of the year. Might have been the jinx of the year. He's got a clean card today. Oh, no.
Sorry, Charlie Hoffman.
At the Cognizant this year. And that was your first tournament, right?
My first tournament.
Your first tournament on a PGA Tour Live.
Yeah.
And Charlie Hoffman steps up to...
There was no opinion. It was 17, just stating a fact.
Steps up to... Well, hey, look. Whenever an announcer talks about a kicker making X amount of field goals...
I'm
going
to have to send some hate mail to Fried Egg, who were the ones who found that clip and decided to expose me.
It was more funny than anything.
Anytime I think about saying clean card on the air, I think of Charlie Hoffman now. So... There's that.
And again, look, I don't believe in the announcer jinx. Like, as somebody who has done play-by-play and called a no-hitter, like, it's your job to inform the viewers of what they're looking at and what they may have missed.
It was the 17th hole at the Cognizant Classic,
yep.
One of the hardest holes
and honestly,
on the PGA Tour.
One of the hardest, well...
At PGA National.
I was about to say one of the hardest courses on the PGA Tour, but they've kind of neutered it over the last couple of years, so it's not that. But 17 is still a really tough hole. And to make it through that golf course bogey-free in 16 holes is worth noting. It was just unfortunate timing that Charlie shanked one off the property.
Truly, into somebody's backyard across the water.
If you did not see this thing, like, it was jarring. Jarring to see
He laughed
someone.
At himself. It was that
oh,
bad.
Oh, it was that bad. Because, I mean, there's nothing else you can do in that situation.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, he was perfect. He had bogey-free day going.
Yeah.
Which just tells you, again.
Make sure that clip lives forever, I'm sure.
Yeah. I'm just really upset that I just thought about making it my shot of the year.
Well.
Now.
We spend more time on it
than... We still got to talk about it.
Some of the other ones.
Again, that is our one call. That's all. Gruber Law Offices has been serving the people of Wisconsin for more than 35 years. Gruber Law Offices, Wisconsin's premier injury firm. Wisconsin's own. Gruber Law Offices, one call. That's all. We have our sound bites of the year. A lot of great quotes to go through. Which ones were the best? We dive into that next on the team.
This is On the Tee with Gabe Neitzel and Stephen Watson on 94.5 ESPN.
With 18 unforgettable holes on 250 acres of natural private land, the Bog provides the ultimate golf experience. To book your next tee time, call 262-284-7075 or visit golfthebog.com. Enjoy golf. Enjoy the Bog. Gabe Neitzel, Stephen Watson. With you today, the season finale of Season 5 on the Tee here on ESPN Milwaukee. Before we get to our Gem of the Week, and really Gem of the Year, because we're going to be going over some sound clips, our favorite from the year, I looked it up. How many double bogeys did Scottie Scheffler have in major championships?
I thought you were talking about the Hoffman clip. Okay.
Now, yeah. I did. I couldn't. So, you had mentioned Friday, and I looked, the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for us, but, they got
to
protect
I wonder
the
who
property.
Reported it to the tour that we need to take this clip down immediately.
I have no idea
who that possibly could have been.
It was no longer available on the Friday web Twitter page because it was taken down due to media rights, but... I'll have to find a different clip of it living somewhere. But how many double bogeys for Scottie Scheffler in major championships this year?
Three.
That's correct.
Really? So he had fewer than Rory.
Yes.
God, I love that so much.
He did not have one at Augusta, but then he had one in each of the following major championships.
So. How fun must that be? To play 72 holes.
And not have a single double?
Yeah.
I can't imagine it.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, sounds like it'd be a good time. But there are a lot of memorable clips throughout the course of this season. What were the best things said? I go back to our guy who I just become a bigger and bigger fan of, and especially can be a big fan of now because the Ryder Cup is over. And that is our guy, Victor Hovland, who is just...
Our guy. Friend of show.
I want to be his friend.
Do you, though?
Why not?
I don't think I can hang with him. I don't think my brain could possibly go in the places that his does.
Sure, but I would enjoy listening to talk to himself as he's working through stuff.
Maybe at like 2 a.m. I'd have a conversation with Victor Hovland.
Yeah, after a couple of adult beverages. Sure, why not? But he is refreshingly honest.
Yes.
Like, can it's just a part of who he is, and he's going to be open. And after he won the Valspar this year, he was accused basically of being a perfectionist. And he, again, there were so many good quotes from him, even just in this one press conference, where he kind of talked about how he thought it was funny of, hey, I'm a professional athlete. I'm trying to get better at what I do, and I'm labeled as a perfectionist, which is kind of weird, because if you're a professional athlete, you're not trying to get better. Like, what are we doing? So then he was asked, and I think this is the reason why this ultimately becomes my favorite quote of the year from Victor, is because I think it's something we can all apply our own golf game to. Because so he was asked, hey, is there anything outside of golf where you're like that, where you're kind of this perfectionist? And here's what Victor had to say.
I don't care too much about other things outside of golf, because I don't have time or energy to put the same amount into other things. So naturally, when you only get to do certain things just a few times here and there, you can't have a perfectionist mindset, if that makes sense. So I try to just do 80%, just do good enough, and then hopefully over time, I mean, you do the best you can with the limited resources that you have, but over time, you'd like to see an improvement, just get a little bit better all the time. But I'm not super hard on myself if I'm not really good at something when I haven't put the effort into it. But golf is, it's been my life for a long time. It's what consumes my thoughts and my time. So if I'm not spending that time to do it correctly, then what am I doing?
The funny part about that is he is talking about things other than golf in his life, because golf is his life. He is a professional athlete. All of us have so many other things in our life other than golf, but we love it and we want to go out and we want to play as much. But that's a quote that we should all take a mindset to our own golf games. Obviously, Victor has a different mindset because he's a pro. He's got the time.
He gets paid to play.
He gets paid to play and obsess over it. And we still obsess over it, but we can't give 100% of ourselves to this game. We just can't. It's just not possible. So seeing those little improvements, not being too hard on yourself, not being a perfectionist on the course, because, again, this is a hobby for us. Even though we love it so much and want to pour thousands of dollars of resources into it, whether that's to play or equipment, whatever. I think it's just such a great mindset to have on something that's a hobby. None of us are pros. We don't have the time that he does. So why would we expect to improve at such a rapid rate that is just not realistic?
Yeah.
And that's why I think that's the quote of the year. I just love the mindset he has to things outside of golf, and that's how a lot of us should treat the game of golf.
Yeah, I mean, it's so true. I think about it personally. Like, I maybe spent 15 minutes on the range all summer, and I'm wondering why I didn't score so well this year, you know?
What happened to my game, man?
And or I have friends who go out there, and they try these crazy shots, and they don't pull them off. And I'm like, oh, did you practice that one? Did you practice putting today? Did you practice bunker shots? No, I just ripped driver at the range. Okay. What do you expect? Focus more on who you're with and maybe the golf course you're playing and the opportunity to get away and play this game, and you'll find yourself enjoying it a whole lot more. That was kind of my takeaway personally from this summer. Was I didn't play the best golf. I had some really memorable rounds.
Yeah.
One with you.
I was there.
Maybe the most memorable for sure up there in my life. But I also had some really bad rounds. But I did it with good people. And yeah, I love that mindset from Victor. It's like, don't expect so much out of your score.
I need your quote of the year.
So I'm going to go back to Augusta. I know.
Well, wow.
We love the Masters, right? But it's not Rory. It's not Scotty. It's Frankie.
Well, I've been doing my hardest to get it over the green. I've been practicing as hard as I can. Just not reaching it this year, but I'm just trying my hardest.
That's the voice of Frankie Fleetwood. Perhaps the most viral soundbite of this entire golf season.
I'm just trying
during
my hardest.
The par 3 contest, and he tried to, you know, clear the water with a long tee shot for his young age. He wasn't able to do it, but
hey, we got
talk about
year.
Some good perspective.
We got next year, Frankie. We still got next year.
You know, it gives him some motivation heading into this upcoming April, but there's a second layer to that soundbite, and it happened this past weekend when his dad, Tommy, went out and won in India on the DP World Tour, and he delivered this soundbite about his son.
So we were at home last week, and we were driving the buggy. I think we were playing golf together, and he says, he just said randomly, he said, hey, do you know what you've never done? So you've never won a tournament, and then I've been able to run onto the 18th green. And I was like, I'm writing that down. So I had that written down all week. Like I say, it's just another opportunity, really. There's going to be many more times where I hopefully get the chance to do that. But that was, like, all day today. Had in my mind, you know, could I put myself in a position where I can actually make that moment happen? So it's just one of those little things. It means a lot to me. Like, it means so much to me. And that was really cool. That's what I wanted to do all day.
I feel like Frankie Fleetwood became an MVP of this golf season. And it started at Augusta, and then to hear Tommy and have that type of perspective. You know, I'm always here for a good sappy dad moment.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
We've seen that evolution from Tommy Fleetwood, who's become arguably the most likable guy in the professional game. And he ripped our hearts out in the Ryder Cup, but he's one of the easiest guys to root for. And I just loved his perspective there of how much it meant to him to win and how motivated he was to win so that his son could run onto the green for the first time when he won.
Sounds like Frankie was just getting a little jealous of Bennett.
Yeah.
Bennett Scheffler, yeah. Who can barely run, but was able to do it how many times?
He took his first steps at Quail Hollow. We all watched it on live television. We watched Bennett Scheffler grow up this PGA Tour season.
Those sound bites are Gem of the Week, brought to you by the Jewelry Center. Engagement rings, wedding bands, gifts for that special someone, even repairs. It all happens at the Jewelry Center. Visit any one of their three locations, Greenfield, Brookfield, or in Burlington, or online at shoptjc.com. We close out the show talking about a little personal golf and some of our favorite new places we may have visited this year. That's next on the team. Discover a hidden lakeside course in beautiful Delavan, Wisconsin at Majestic Oaks. Tee off on a course with over 2 miles of lakefront where wide fairways and challenging greens await. This lakeside 18-hole course offers a golfing experience like no other. Join them for the best family golf nights in the state. Everyone can enjoy the game together and enjoy golf, cart, drinks, snacks for under $15 per person. If you're ready to play, book that tee time. LakeLawnResort.com and Majestic Oaks Golf Course. Big shout out to them. We visited them earlier this year, gave us this signed golf flag from the entire team at Majestic Oaks. Huge shout out to them for supporting On the Tee throughout the course of this year. And again, the read is correct. It is a beautiful hidden gem that I was unaware of until the last couple of years. They've had done the WTMJ Open there the last couple of seasons. We got that chance to go down there and play, and it is a spectacularly fun course to play.
And I'll tell you what, even though On the Tee is ending, that course is still popping right now. I imagine the foliage going right around the lake, and it's a great opportunity to go out there. $15, that's just an outrageous price to go out there and make a memory with your kids.
We have reached the final segment, and we are going to take a look at your favorite new course that you got to play this year.
Yeah, I didn't play anywhere new in Wisconsin. As you know, my golf was a little limited this season, but I did go on a buddy's trip. And I played number 10 at Pinehurst. I had gone on to Pinehurst in the past, and I had played 2 and 8 and Tobacco Road, which were some of the featured courses on this, you know, 40th birthday trip for our guy Kyle. But number 10 was not open in 22. And this Tom Doak design is a gem. If you make a trip to Pinehurst, you have to include number 10 on your itinerary. It has the feelings of Mammoth Dunes with Tom Doak all over it. It's super wide, forgiving. The way that he designs his golf holes to, you know, be high to low to high, and he has these great reveals. When you crest certain parts of the fairway, you don't actually see the whole layout of the golf hole or the green complex until you reach these crests. And the reveal is really dynamic on every single hole out there. So make sure you add number 10 to your itinerary if you go out to Pinehurst.
Yeah, same here. I didn't have a chance to add a lot of courses in Wisconsin to the, hey, haven't played here before. But I did go down to Florida. I haven't played a ton of Florida golf, but went down early season and played at the PGA Village in Port St. Lucie. Three amazing courses, great trip. Shout out to my guy Mike over at X Golf in Brookfield. Him and his brother have done this trip. It's insane how much those two end up playing.
Yeah,
because they do an early wave of people and a late wave of people throughout the course of the week. They're there the entire time. They play 13 rounds of golf in a week. They wow. play 36 a day, except for Wednesday, where they play one round of golf. So
a lot
I was
of golf.
I was a part. Yeah.
And, sounds exhausting.
And yes, but awesome at the same yeah. time. So there they have three different courses. They have the Wanamaker, they have the Ryder, and they have a Dye. They have a Pete Dye course. And the Dye course is, it was just really cool to play a Pete Dye course somewhere other than this state. Yep. And I know they're all over the place, and we are very lucky to have the four that we have 45 minutes north of us in Kohler. But it was just kind of cool to play another Dye course because you can see a lot of the Pete Dye-ish stuff, and it was a spectacular experience.
Yeah.
Again, Pete Dye designing a championship-level course. They actually played the PGA Pro Championship down there. You know, they get the one where the top 20 end up qualifying. You know, the actual PGA pros qualify for the PGA Championship. They played it down at that. So that was cool. After playing it, watching it on TV, that was a pretty cool experience.
Yeah. I mean, Florida's always nice.
Especially in March.
Yeah, especially in March.
Especially in March.
What's one on your bucket list here in Wisconsin you still need to cross off?
I need to do the Sand Valley experience. I got to do that next year. I've only done Sand Valley. I played a couple of years ago the Par 3 Championship that the WSGA puts on up there, so I've done the Sandbox. But I have not done Mammoth. I have not done
You've
Sedge.
Never done Mammoth?
No. I've never done Mammoth.
Oh my gosh.
I've never done
your
Sedge.
Driver on Mammoth?
I've never done Lido. So that's the one I need to check off the list.
And they just added Commons as well, which is going to be opening for all of next year. Also, Loch LaBelle's opening a short course that's going to be available in the spring. So more great golf coming here to Wisconsin. I still need to do, you know, Eagle Spring properly.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I feel like this time of year would be a great time with the foliage. Yeah. Get down there for that 9-hole experience. People swear by Minocqua. I need to find a way to get up there. Maybe take the family up there. Minocqua is, I feel like, number one on my Wisconsin bucket list that I still have not done.
I mean, to that, I've got a buddy who's a member at Pine Hills, and I still haven't played Pine Hills.
I know. We were going to get you on this fall
and
with our guy, our caddy, and they're undergoing a couple of renovations, a few holes out there. So,
but honestly,
I haven't played in a few years, and that's still my favorite private.
You mentioned short courses. I had an opportunity for the first time play the North 12, 12 North, up at Trappers. They did a tremendous job with that.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun as well. And again, because so many of these places are putting those types of courses in, and I played all 27 at Trappers. Been a couple of years since I did that, and then had the opportunity to play 12 North, which, again, they had to move a lot of trees out where they ended up putting the course, but it was awesome. So that was a great short course that I got to experience this year.
Yeah, I love the trend that a lot of these, you know, resorts are doing, building these short courses. It's just such an additive experience for golfers to tack that onto a round, to do it as a warm-up before a round, or as a way to get somebody into the game. It's really the best way right now. We have so many options here in Wisconsin. You know, you have one in Kohler, you have one at Sand Valley, all the ones that we just mentioned, Loch LaBelle, obviously up there in Wisconsin Dells. Geneva National is, you know, working on one right now, I believe.
Yeah,
as
they
well.
Are. Yeah.
And, you know, that is how we're going to grow the game. Like, I feel so good about where this game is at as we wrap up 5 years of On the Tee, and Wisconsin golf is still as good as ever.
No, it might be better than ever because they just continue to put resources in it and building amazing and great golf courses and even just putting money into the courses that exist to make them even better.
And the season's not done yet.
No, get out, play golf, enjoy the fall golf. That's season 5 on the tee. NBA basketball coming up next.